Music and Booze with Mo is co-produced and distributed by Nitty Grits, the media division of the National Food and Beverage Foundation, changing the world one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? For the next few episodes, we'll be doing something a little special here on Music and Booze with Mo. It is my tropical summer of cocktails. I've never made a secret of my love for tropical and tiki. I love wearing flowers in my hair. I always have. I grew up by the beach. Surfing was a big part of my life. Tiki naturally fell in line with all of that. And tiki is going through quite a resurgence, revival. There are many, many things going on in the tiki world and the tropical world, so I took it upon myself to talk to various friends and colleagues and new friends about their lives in the tiki world, and it's been tons of fun talking to these folks about their tropical creations and such. So join us for the summer as we have Mo's Tropical Summer on Music and Booze with Mo. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you in part by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers located in the Sunset Junction area of Silver Lake. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated selection of spirits, and one of the most impressive collections of bitters anywhere. That's Barkeeper in Los Angeles. Check them out online at barkeepersilverlake.com, or better yet, just head on down to the store. It's time to talk with Chris Elford, owner of Navy Strength in Seattle, a really fantastic tropical bar, currently one of the four nominees for Best New American Bar, the Spirit Awards from Tales of the Cocktail, a national/international awards ceremony that will be taking place in late July. So congratulations on Navy Strength and Chris and his team for earning that nomination. And it's not an easy thing to do. A lot of bars open up every year. So we sit down with Chris and talk about community. We talk about hardcore. And of course, we talk about cocktails, especially tiki ones. So join us while we talk all these things at Navy Strength in Seattle.
All right, let's do this thing.
Cool.
So I always start off with... just ask me who you are.
I'm Chris Elford.
So yeah, Chris Elford.
Elford, yeah.
You think you are?
Yeah.
For today you'll be?
I mean.
So it's just so everybody knows that you're Chris and we are in your bar.
Yeah, we're in Navy Strength.
In Navy Strength in Seattle, yeah. Right now, which is kind of awesome.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of, I don't think that I have done an interview with anyone at their bar.
Really?
I haven't been able to because usually we have to like get you out of work or go somewhere else. This is the first time I've actually interviewed someone in their own bar.
Oh, okay.
So,
cool.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you.
It's very exciting. This is a beautiful space.
Tell him what he won.
I know, right? Navy Strength Seattle, get on down here. And you were just telling me how long you've had this bar. This has been about a year.
Yep.
But what led you to this? What is this tattoo?
What is my tattoo?
This? Did you say Southern? No, the other one.
Southern Speak Music.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Mark Twain said that.
I thought I knew that. Is this a wolf, the other one?
Yeah, that's a wolf.
Okay.
Yeah. RVA, Richmond, Virginia.
Nice.
Yeah.
And there's your Navy Strength tattoo.
Yeah, that's my Navy Strength tattoo.
Skull with a drink in it and a sword through the skull.
Yeah.
And not too sweet brass knuckles.
Not too sweet.
You know what? We need to take pictures of your arms. That'll be your, when we post this. This will be your image. It'll be the arm since we're talking about your tattoos.
Okay.
But you've had this for about a year.
Yeah, we've had this for a year.
And you got here because?
I'm bad with money.
You're
no.
Bad. You always wanted a tiki adjacent bar.
Yeah, I really like drinks. I really like bars, actually. Mm-hmm. And
why do you like bars?
It's the only thing I ever found that I loved, actually.
For bars?
Vocationally, and like, I don't know, I just fell in love with booze, kind of in general. And
I too love booze.
Yeah.
I always liken it as to foodies, you know? There's something to the element of creating a cocktail. Or just having fun with spirits.
Yeah. Yeah, for me this was like, in Seattle it's like the economy's pretty wild here right now, and I got married, my wife Anu has owned Rob Roy, which is
she owns Rob Roy?
There.
Yeah. I love that bar.
Yeah, she's owned Rob Roy for almost 10 years now.
Oh my god, that's
and,
amazing.
And she bought it as
that's always
a bartender
on my must
there.
List whenever I come visit.
We'll pop over there after this conversation.
Yeah.
I met her about 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago actually, and we dated long distance for a while, and then I moved out here, and we pretty much immediately knew that, you know, that we were going to get married, but also that we weren't going to be able to afford a house in the housing market here.
Yeah.
And we were like, you know, fuck it, let's open some more bars, and we have a few passions, but you know, certainly
spirits a big one.
Yeah, yeah, and beer is the other one. So we opened No Anchor, our beer bar, first. Which is right next door, which got a James Beard nomination for best new restaurant in America, which
Holy
is crazy.
Crap.
And so people like travel to like people Seriously? Travel to eat at No Anchor. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Damn.
And then we opened Navy Strength next door, and then we opened Navy Strength Coffee, which is our adjacent coffee shop, which does all of our juicing and prep for the bar during the day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now I feel like I should have been eating next door.
I mean, it's not going
anywhere.
Still
got tomorrow.
So.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, I'm still here
good.
Tomorrow. You open for lunch?
Yeah.
Okay.
We do brunch 7 days a week.
You have brunch on Saturday?
7 days a week.
7 days a week. You
yeah.
did just say that 7 days
All seven.
A week.
All seven.
You're like, yeah, Saturday would be one of those 7 days.
Yeah.
Totally fair. I did not sleep with them last night. Congratulations. That's incredible.
Thank you.
That is super incredible.
Yeah, it's cool.
Wow. So, but we are sitting here in Navy Strength to talk about spirits. And so, do you have a love affair with rum in particular? Because you've got this sort of tiki-esque place here.
Yeah, I have a love affair with cocktails. I think that, like, it definitely did not start with rum for me.
Yeah.
You know, I've visited a few rum distilleries now, and, like, I would say that I am. I would say that I am on my rum journey. I love all types of rum. Like I love the really like bright, clean, you know, rums. I really like the
rums.
Crazy, like dunder, intense, like Jamaican rums. I love the funky agricole rums. You'll get there someday.
I don't hate. I just don't love.
But I also think there's like something special to getting into those, just because you're like generally supporting the economy of a third world.
Of a third world country. That's true.
Place and you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely. So, when did you start bartending?
I started bartending in 2000. I would say I started bartending in earnest in 2006.
When you say in earnest, Does that imply that that's when you started?
It's when I lied and said that I was a bartender and got to bartender. But I had, like, worked in restaurants where I, like, had to make a drink for someone, yeah. but it wasn't, like, I wasn't, like, tending to a bar.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
more like people walked up to a counter and got something and then
got,
went
like,
inside.
Like, a highball or something like that.
Yeah, basically.
Two or three.
And so I was a barista at this, like, French brasserie, and I wanted to bartend, and the lunchtime bartender didn't show up, and they were like, hey, can you bartend? And I was like, you're goddamn right, I can bartend. Just show me what needs tending, and I'll just bartend my way on over to it.
Yeah.
yeah.
That's awesome.
And then, and then I got into beer first and worked in beer bars, and then I got into cocktails a few years later. But.
Well, and in this bar, these are pretty detailed cocktails.
Yeah.
So this, I mean, that's something years ago that a friend of mine, anyone who listens to this podcast regularly has heard me say it before. A friend of mine years ago said, tiki people are like the Trekkies of the cocktail world because it was so disrespected for such a long time. Oh, you want big foo-foo umbrellas and flowers and stuff yeah. in your drinks. But when made properly, there's a lot going on in them. So they were very early craft cocktails, essentially, because now we expect a list of, you know, hibiscus
totally.
Syrup and all of that kind of stuff. And those
yeah.
drinks were doing that a long time ago. So what you're doing now is pretty complex.
Yeah.
Cocktails. What took you there? You fell in love with complexity after a while?
No, it was more like, I mean, I feel like everything that we do at Navy Strength is kind of a response to, as much a response to the things that I don't like as the things that I like.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's a lot of, like, if you read our menu, like, mm-hmm. we don't list our ingredients in the cocktail menu, mm-hmm. and it's an illustrated, like, full-color menu mm-hmm. that's, like, the entire point of it is to...
Go, oh, that pretty picture!
More than that, like, really just to, like, for the average person to be able to walk in here and make a decision and get something that they like without being intimidated by a bunch of ingredients that they don't know what they are. That was inspired by Cure in New Orleans.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
one of my favorite bars in the country, and I really like that they do list ingredients, but they also have, like, kind of a little description that kind of just says, like, what the drink is.
Yeah.
And that really spoke to me. I think a lot about language and a lot about the messages that we send people, and you know, through just body language, through setting, you know, ambiance, and then also through our menu. And the goal here for me was not for people to come in and be like, wow, these cocktails are really complicated.
Yeah.
I really want people to come in and be able to order a drink, having never been here before, without feeling like they're on trial, and then drink the drink and really enjoy it.
An education.
And then go back to their life, like go back to their conversation, which is the entire fucking reason they went to the bar in the first place. You know what I mean? So I've just worked in a lot of bars where it was like a lot of
you got a little too pretentious.
Well, I mean, I don't know.
You're trying to come up with the nicest way to say this.
I am
possible.
Totally
I
trying to
tell.
Come up with the nicest way possible to say this.
Well, there.
Here's what I think. User experience mm-hmm. is a really important thing, mm-hmm. and there's a way to present really delicious drinks and food in a way that is user-friendly and that says to a person who walks in the door, you're in on the joke. Not like we're up on this pedestal, like maybe someday you'll reach
you'll
us.
Be here.
Yeah, like we do the same thing with our food next door. Like we don't say that any of our, you know, all of our proteins are cooked sous vide at specific temperatures and, you know, like.
Well, I think we had that conversation talking about the Miller High Life.
Yeah.
Because you guys serve Miller High Life here.
Yeah.
But you won a James Beard Award for your beer bar, for the food at your beer bar.
We were nominated.
I'm sorry, you were nominated. Sorry, no, I'm just projecting for your future.
Good winning for us, honestly. That's good ass for me.
Just projecting for later. But you've got Miller High Life here, and we were just joking around about how it's wonderful to be able to go to a place and get something that's high-end and interesting and intriguing to you, but also to be able to get something considered lowbrow and not be judged for it.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, truly...
If you want the champagne of beers, you can have the champagne.
Yeah, and I'm just like a it's their party kind of person. Like, when you walk in the door, like, I feel like cocktail people have kind of trained people who don't like the craft cocktail-y stuff to apologize before they order.
Aww.
And that's a lie. Like, that's not what this is about. This is about, like, you walking into a bar and feeling safe and feeling welcome and having fun. Yeah, forgetting about it.
That's what a bar's supposed to be. It's supposed to be your escape from whatever you're needing to escape from.
Yeah.
Time.
Sure. And like Tiki takes that to the extreme, right?
For sure.
You know,
right?
Like you get to escape, but at the end of the day, like to me, the greatest Tiki bars are places that not only transport you to a different like place and even a different time, but they also like welcome you and make you feel warm and just kind of, the whole bar is just kind of like a hug. You know what I mean? Like that's the best. And we definitely try and like, we are not, you know, it's by any stretch of the imagination a traditional tiki bar, but we definitely carry that ethos and take it, you know, pretty seriously.
Really cool.
It's a very autobiographical space.
Yeah. Well, like we were saying, there you've got the bar tiki mugs up there.
Yep.
So see, we can transition to music now.
Richmond, Virginia. Yeah.
So you're not from Richmond originally, though.
Well, I'm from Canada originally.
Yeah, you're Canadian.
Yeah, yeah. But I spent my childhood in Canada, but I grew up in Virginia, and my music history. I was basically a Benjamin Button music lover in the sense that I learned about the classic things that a lot of people grew up on later in life because I was raised in a extremely Christian household, and so we only listened to Christian music growing up. And
I dated that guy once.
Yeah, sure.
He heard no pop music really until he was like in college or something.
Yeah, yeah, that was kind of my thing. But my thing was that I could listen to whatever Christian music I wanted. So I ended up listening to Christian punk music, and that was my quick transition. By the time I was like 14,
yeah,
probably into punk music, and I fell for punk rock pretty hard. Like I was into. You know, I had the, you know, Minor Threat complete discography.
At this point, were you in the States?
Yeah, yeah, I was
yeah.
in Virginia.
So
at
now
this
you were
point.
In Virginia. So.
I was.
There's that whole Washington D.C. punk.
Yeah, exactly.
So much came out there.
Yeah, they definitely have, and that's something that's like not. People on the West Coast, I feel like, or at least in the Pacific Northwest, missed out on a lot of those bands. But yeah, definitely like Minor Threat. I mean, the whole like Discord Records.
Yeah.
Catalog, old and new. I got really into that stuff, and I got really into hardcore. I went to a lot of hardcore shows, which like Virginia Beach, which is where I was living, and Richmond both have like and had, especially back then, very like vibrant hardcore scenes. And I actually felt a lot of like kinship with those people because I've always just had a big heart. I think kind of because of Christian upbringing, but I've always had a big heart for like marginalized people, and I think that hardcore and punk music like mm-hmm. definitely has that in common too.
Oh yeah.
They both deal with it in very different ways.
Yeah, but, totally.
I actually lived in a record store when I graduated high school.
Oh my god, that's right. That was you. We were emailing about this.
Yeah.
So how did you live in a record store exactly?
I mean, going to this. Have you ever seen High Fidelity?
Yeah, totally.
I just started going there all the time, and eventually
they
were like,
the owners, oh, we got a place upstairs.
No. The owners lived there. It was called Relative Theory Records, and they were like two guys who had like struck out on their own. They had worked in independent record stores.
And they just had like a back room area with a cot or something?
They had, we had the office, which mm-hmm. had like a cot and just some sleeping bags. And then the place was like, it was a pretty large store. And so we had an espresso machine with like a little like cafe kind of, or just like a coffee counter basically. And then we had our records, and then we had a little space for an art gallery, which we do art shows at, and then we had enough of this kind of a stage that we would do shows there too. And
so
we would
like collaborative.
Yeah, we would close at 2 a.m. because people would come up like when the bars were letting out and like shop for records. And then we would close the doors and like, you know, get a bunch of beer and fucking like skateboard in the record shop and like hang out and just like listen to records and like but anyways, yeah, like High Fidelity was like how I just that like started showing up there, and then eventually they were like, we need help. They didn't pay me or anything. Like I just like
You got to live there. So
exactly.
You have to pay rent.
Yeah. And I just kind of, I don't even think I like, I was probably not a very good employee, but I am still friends with those guys. And one of them is a restaurateur now, and the other one is a wine distributor, and they're both like, we're kind of on each other's radar again, and like, you know.
And I think I was telling you this, you know, I started doing this because I was seeing that correlation.
Yeah, for
sure. I would see these musicians that started buying bars, or maybe, you know, they just got into creating cocktails and were working behind the sticks somewhere. And it was happening so much, and I was seeing so many people who practiced one form of art changing over to another, in a sense.
Yeah, I mean,
who had these intense creative passions that...
Well, they're both creative, but they also, like, are both really good for people who don't like rules. I've never liked rules, I've never liked authority. You know, that's the reason
that
I wanted to, like...
Yes, that's true. I never even thought about that side of it.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right.
Yeah, when you're in a band, like, that's your thing.
That's your thing. Yeah, exactly. It's your own business.
Yeah.
When you're in a band, it is definitely your own business. Your own business, your own marriage.
Yeah.
All of that stuff.
Your own platform.
I never thought about that. Yeah.
Your own microphone. Yeah.
So you were in a band too, right?
I was in bands in high school, and then, like, once I left, I played in, like... Yeah, like indie bands in high school, which was really fun, and into college too.
Yeah.
And
did you play an instrument or did you sing?
Yeah, I played both. I mean, I played guitar and sang, and I played bass. I mean, I grew up, like, I started out playing the piano, like, took piano lessons and hated it when I was a kid. And then my parents basically were kind of like, you need to be doing music somehow, but I could switch instruments if I wanted to. And so I started on the baritone, and then I switched to the tuba because I thought it was funny.
Tuba?
Yeah. And so I played the tuba, and I started playing the drums in the marching band, which was fun. And then I got into guitar, and guitar was fun because I never took lessons on it. Everything else, I took lessons, but guitar, my parents just bought me a guitar, and like...
And you just started playing it?
I just started playing it, and I learned by... So I could read music on these other instruments, but not guitar. Except I could read tablature from Guitar Magazine. So, you know, the first song I ever learned to play was... Wonderwall by Oasis.
Oh, wow.
And
Mine was Blackbird by
Beatles. That's a good one, actually.
I was
a lot of my friends, that was their first song.
It was 9. That's because I was thinking not a, someone who was coming to the house.
Not a technically intense song, and neither is Wonderwall. There's really, you know.
Yeah. And then I think when I was like in college, I picked that guitar. The guitar still sits in a corner of my place, but I haven't touched it.
My niece has my guitar now, which is kind of cool.
Is she using it? Is she playing it?
Yes.
Awesome.
That's amazing.
See, that's the thing. It's like, mine's just sitting in a corner. And then I dated a guitar player. I'm like, hey, will you restring that for me? He's like, yeah, no problem. So it got restrung, but I haven't touched it. So they're probably dry and crunchy again, you know?
I mean.
But yeah, I was like, I took the lessons and I did it, and then I set it back down. I guess Wonderwall would be easy.
Wonderwall is quite easy. Yeah.
Were you able to utilize that tuba?
No, I never played tuba in a band. I mean, I played it in like the high school band, but yeah. And then I can play the drums and the bass and the keyboard, and I've like kind of done that stuff in like just like bands having fun with friends, but mostly guitar and singing in bands, which the guitar did the heavy lifting because I'm not a very good singer. But in punk music, it doesn't really matter if you're.
That
not
is
a
true.
Good singer.
It's about like the expression.
Yeah, I actually went to. So I went to a small Christian school in Norfolk, Virginia. But I went to school with some people who are like, you know, kind of made it in music. Nathan Williams, who does Waves.
Okay. Oh. Oh yeah.
He and I went to school together.
Did he move to San Francisco to do that?
He ended up finishing high school in San Diego.
Okay.
And he lives in LA now.
He's a California thing. Oh. Okay.
Waves.
Isn't he dating some other indie rock chick?
Yeah, he dates the woman from Best Coast.
Best Coast.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Okay.
I love her music too.
Yeah.
It's very like Nico Case.
That's so funny because I love this is Nico Case actually right here.
Hey.
I love Nico Case.
Yeah.
I've never thought that. When you say that, I totally get why.
Yeah, Nathan's super talented, and we play his music at the bar, and like, you know, he and I don't really talk anymore. I mean, we're like Facebook friends and stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, I definitely think the world of what he's doing, and two of my other like best friends from high school, Matt White, who records under Matthew E. White, and
I was gonna say
records.
Matthew E. White, so he's got that kind of like funky cowboy.
They have the like have this like Richmond sound that they're doing.
Is that what that? Yeah, that's
Space
so
Bomb.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, they're pretty rad.
No,
they've
like
done records with Bedouin, and then our other friend Andy Jenkins just came out with a new album that's really rad. And he's touring on it now, and like he's
under his own name.
Andy Jenkins is
that one I have.
he like co-writes his record like just came out, and he co-writes like pretty much all of Matt's songs.
Is that funky?
Yeah. He's just a really gifted writer.
Playlist, which makes me really happy because I'm an old ska. So how do you, what is your direction here in the bar? Does it just depend on the night?
Music-wise?
Yeah.
We're still kind of like, I don't know, we kind of changed that over time, but yeah, we play a lot of like, kind of like old reggae and, yeah, ska. We play a lot of this, we play a lot of this band Monster Rally. We're kind of like, they're almost like, it has definite Exotica leanings, but it's like, but it's not Exotica. Do you want to listen to it? I can actually.
We'll put it on there right now.
Yeah.
We'll play it on, put it on the mic.
No, I mean, like, I'm sure you have the, I've listened to your podcast and I know that you've.
Well, I know all kinds of stuff, but I always say, there's no way I can know everything. This sounds familiar, but the name is somewhat familiar anyway, so who knows? Let me look at the picture.
So this is, you'll notice the name of the album is Mystery Cove, which is one of the cocktails that are out.
Alright, I'll go look this up.
Yeah.
Because I can't hear
they're
shit.
Really rad. I mean, they have probably...
Awesome.
They have five or six songs.
Look that up. Awesome.
I'll go with the phone charger. So yeah. Yeah, I lived in a record store. And then I moved to Richmond. And got into restaurants, but I also started a music nonprofit with some friends.
Oh yeah, you were telling about that too.
Yeah.
In email.
Which like that's one of the things that I'm still really excited about.
Yeah.
Which is it doesn't exist anymore.
I was gonna say, do you still do anything?
But
with
the ethos is like something that I still really love, which is it was called Patchwork Collective, and our idea was it was actually Matt Wyatt and I did it together.
Oh, yeah, that's so cool.
And the idea was like Matt wanted his music to take off in Richmond, like that was ultimately like the initial reason, like kind of why we started it. But Matt and our friend Scott and I started it because they were going to jazz shows and I was going to punk shows, and they were like the same like 20 people go to every jazz show, and I was like, that's so funny because the same like 30 people go to every punk show. So we started like basically putting together multi-genre shows that were more like.
Is this playing over us right now?
Yeah.
Okay, it only just occurred to me it wasn't Scott anymore. I'm like, oh, you're playing me the thing this way.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Magic of Sonos.
The magic of, yeah, yeah, I love it. So go back to Matthew White.
So we were like doing this.
You're
so
like, how can we make people
like basically
interact,
but also like it was twofold. So it was like the bands get to not play for the same 20 people every time. The new people will hear
and
their
new
music.
People will hear new music.
And the people that go to the shows get to experience different
new
things. So it started out really small, and it actually like, we ended up booking some pretty like next level shit. So we started out like doing like, you know, friends bands.
Yeah.
Like we would have like a folk musician will come and play, or like maybe somebody that does kind of like modern like country-ish, like almost like Father John Misty, kind of like that kind of vibe stuff. Really like storytelling oriented stuff. And then we'd have a punk band play, and we'd have a jazz band play, or we'd have a
like on the same
DJ
night
at
have
the same
like
show.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're
and so
forcing
we'd have,
people.
So then
like
we'd have a DJ perform, and we'd have like a post-rock band play, or like a shoegaze kind of band play, and then we'd have something like really experimental, like a noise band or something playing. So all these people are experiencing different bands.
So you're exposed to all kinds of stuff.
Exactly. And then we did this thing called Patch Orchestra, which was a, we did, it was on the 1 year anniversary of Patchwork Collective, where we did this, we took over an old firehouse, and we had all these bands kind of like playing in different rooms, which culminated in Patch Orchestra, which was a bunch of Virginia Commonwealth University students performing a symphony that one of the other students had written.
Wow.
And it was like a really, really, really special thing for these people, because like normally you don't
they
get to do that shit
do
until
that.
Like way out of school.
Yeah.
But this was like, no, there was this kid who was like an amazing composer, and the head of the jazz department conducted it. So it was like kind of gave this like gravitas to the whole thing, and like, you know, like press started paying attention.
That's so cool.
We did this thing called the John Cage Music Circus.
Oh my God.
Every year, where we would have like we would have an event where for 1 hour, like starting at 8 p.m. ending at 9 p.m., we would have like 20 bands play throughout the same building at once. And so like if you walk in the door, it's noise.
Okay.
And then if you walk up to any one musician, like there would just be a saxophone player standing somewhere, and you could walk up and like listen to that one person.
Just hear that one piece.
So you and the other stuff becomes background noise.
Yeah.
And then you maybe walk into a room and there's like a full band in there just like playing their thing, and you just like walk around the whole thing.
So basically you had to make your own sense of the chaos.
Yeah,
or
exactly. It was choose your own adventure music. It was really fun. And they were all like, you know, of disparate genres.
That's awesome.
And then the musicians got to like go out for drinks afterwards and like meet each other and stuff. And then we did this thing called the Turntable Sessions, which was one of my favorite things that we did, which was the whole point was to like get people to see the turntable as an instrument. So we would bring...
And you're in Richmond, which is a great city for that.
Because,
I mean, the hip-hop scene is very strong there.
I mean, the creative music scene in general in Richmond was was pretty strong. You know, certainly the punk scene is kind of like what leads the charge. And then, but like any... I mean, there's definitely a hip-hop scene there. There's definitely a noise scene. There's definitely a folk scene. There's some pretty special stuff going on. But anyways, we would have a turntablist, and the idea was like for people to see that as an instrument and not just somebody that like plays other people's music.
Yeah.
And so we would have a group of musicians who were like on the docket for the night, and we'd put everyone's name in a hat. We'd draw the names. You know, we draw four names at a time, and those four musicians would come up, plus the DJ, and then we'd start the clock, and they would just start playing together. They've never played together before, and they would play together for 10 minutes, and maybe it would have, you know, like...
Maybe they'd jam, and it would work out, or maybe it wouldn't.
It could be a dissonant, or it could be totally, like, gelling. Yeah, it was awesome.
And then you wound up in New York.
Yeah.
I guess for a little while. Is that where you got really into the cocktail thing?
Yeah.
In New York?
Yeah. I was hired at the beer guy at a cocktail bar, what's now Mace.
Okay.
But it was called Lewis 649 back then. And I got hired as the beer guy, and then one day, you know, bartenders either got fired or didn't show up to work, and all of a sudden I was the bartender, and then I got hired at Amore Amargo a couple weeks after that place opened, and got to work there, which is like definitely kind of the place where I really cut my teeth, and I was a whiskey distiller, Kings County Distillery, and I ended up...
You were a distiller as well?
Yeah.
My goodness.
I worked at Kings County. I had a lot of jobs when I was there. I ended up opening a beer bar called Proletariat, which is still a very beloved beer bar.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know that bar.
It's kind of catty corner from PDT on St. Mark's, but I just like... I don't know, there's some stupid quote that people say about like luck is like being in the right place at the right time, but also like putting in the work.
Yeah.
And I definitely like, that's, I had like 3 or 4 lucky breaks in my career, but I've also like, I've been working pretty hard ever since.
Yeah.
I did a cocktail zine too. I wrote.
Really?
And it was a satirical cocktail zine called Maximum Cock and Tail. And I wrote the whole thing, and it was like, I was getting into cocktails
being
and
Berkeley
like.
Kid, I totally respect that.
It's like part of how I got my start. I would bring it to USBG meetings and be like, hey, I made this. I made this zine making fun of this thing we all love.
Well, you have to, because go back to that pretentious thing. If people are too high up their own asses, who's going to enjoy going to that space unless you're also kind of a jerk, you know?
Yeah. And I feel like all the people who are pretentious about cocktails are like, hey, Yale just texted me. I feel like all the people who are pretentious about cocktails are, I feel like they grow out of it once they actually realize that they can make it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there are people that when I met them, they were like, stick up their ass, like, cocktail traditionalists who have now, like, kind of chilled out a little bit and are just, like, having a good time.
I was in Houston a couple years ago. I went to Moving Sidewalks out there, and their menu at the time was a zine. Format.
That's
great. Was friggin' hilarious.
Yeah.
So I'm very curious about your zine. And what did you? How long did you do it?
I did four issues.
And you were doing stand-up, and you love cocktails. This must have been hilarious. You had 4 issues of it?
Yeah, we did 4 issues, and I released them about every 4 months. You know, like writing and doing, I would get a different tattooer or a different like illustrator friend basically to do art for it, and then it was basically just, it was like Onion style stuff.
Well, the best zines are fun zines. I mean, sometimes they can be snarky, sometimes they be this, but the ones that I always loved anyway were the ones that had a great sense of humor behind it. It's like the Onion or something where there's a love
like
for
the hard
it.
Times driven.
Yes, yeah. Totally.
Hard
there's
times
still love
great.
For it there.
Yeah.
But you can make fun of something that you love.
Yeah,
you
for
have
sure.
to love it in order to.
And it was all out of
to
love.
To satire it properly.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Absolutely.
And when did you wind up here in Seattle?
Well, kind of through the zine, honestly. So I was doing the zine, and then Lush Life, who does like Portland Cocktail Week and Camp Run Amok and all these like kind of bartender engagement festival type things. They were like, hey, we're doing this thing called Camp Run Amok. Would you be willing to put an ad in your zine for it? Because you're going to all these cocktail things and like handing them out. And those are the people that we want. The people that like your thing are the people that we want to come to this thing. And so, I went to Camp Run Amok in Kentucky, which is like bourbon sleepaway camp for bartenders. And I met Anu, who's now my wife.
Yeah.
And she owned her bar and I didn't own my bar, so... We dated long distance for a while, and then I moved out here to Seattle.
Moved out here, and she has one of the most awesome bars in Seattle.
Yeah, Rob Roy is like, I mean, it's legendary at this point.
It is. It really is.
It's old
school.
So
you were able to do this and open up your own bar, which is only a year old, but already very well respected, obviously.
Yeah, we've gotten like really good press for it, and just have wonderful staff, and I don't know.
I think it goes back to what you said at the very beginning. It's that good vibe. It's, you know, just creating a welcoming environment. And I think you've worked in this music collective and punk rock and all this stuff. And I think hospitality, there's so much of it is about building community.
Absolutely.
And you've done that many times, it sounds like, over the course of your life already.
Yeah, I like that stuff.
Now you've built one here.
Mm-hmm.
Home away from home for you too.
Yep. I think I have a lot to say about community, but one thing that I will say is that, like, it's good to be protective of community. You know, certainly I remember going to, like, hardcore shows and, like, seeing a new person, like, show up and be like, who the fuck is that? You know, like, why are they here? Like, what's their deal? Who are they?
You felt that way sometimes?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, like, that was just, like, this is ours and we're protecting it. And, and the same with cocktails. Like, sometimes, like, you know, you get someone in your bar and you're kind of like... I don't know, they just like, they're playing Stump the Bartender or something, and in your mind you're like, who the fuck are you? Like, just be cool or whatever. But it's because you're like trying to protect this thing that you put a lot into.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly Tiki is that way.
Yeah.
You know, the Tiki community is very protective of what they've created, and, you know.
There's a combination of warmth and protection.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, which I totally understand, but, you know, I definitely feel like, we're creating a community here that is like very welcoming. It's a very good time to be in the bar scene in Seattle.
Yeah.
Actually, we're taking very good care of each other. There's a lot of community engagement. We've done bar cleanups for each other. We're providing meals for people who have just had children. We're, you know, throwing going away parties for people who are leaving town.
Yeah.
We're doing like, we went and planted trees a few weeks ago. Out at the base of Mount Si, out kind of in the country.
I feel like I've heard about that. That's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's just a lot of, like, really, there's a lot of community action happening right now in Seattle, which is, like, totally the Seattle way of, like, doing shit. And we haven't been, like, we haven't been the cool kids in America in the cocktail scene ever, and and I don't think we are ever going to be. And, like, honestly, Seattle's, like, very much in the shadow of Portland, because Portland has some really incredible, like, next-level bars.
No, I think of the, for me, being a California person, I they're not interchangeable, but I think of the Pacific Northwest.
As so being together.
There's definitely cool things in Seattle and cool things in Portland. I mean, how far away is Portland from here? It's like
3 hours.
Couple hours, right?
Yeah, 3 hours. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I feel that way as somebody who moved here, but I think that, like, people within the cities kind of, like, feel a little bit of, like, maybe friendly competition the way that LA and San Francisco or Boston.
I was going to say, LA, San Francisco, or LA and San Diego.
Or LA and New York.
Yeah. Well, actually, what's funny is that LA doesn't really compete so much with
New York. No, but New York
cities.
Does.
And San Francisco. I lived in San Francisco for a long time, and they, you'd always hear this, ugh,
like,
LA,
okay,
whatever. And LA was always like, we love you, San Francisco.
Exactly.
Which always cracked me up.
When I lived in New York, I was like,
fucking LA.
Well, everybody told me, like, you know, basically love New York, hate LA. And then I went to LA for the first time, and I was like, what are you guys fucking talking about? This is great.
Everyone's so friendly.
Yeah. I went to the Varnish. There was, like, a guy playing piano, and I had a great cocktail, and I was like, this is New York. Like, what are you talking about? I only have a few songs that I sing.
I once sang Last Caress by the Misfits at karaoke.
Well, that's fucking really tight.
It was really messed up. It was fun. No, I mean, I didn't mess it up. It's just a messed up song.
Yeah.
Which is why I love it so much.
Yeah.
It's horrible. It was great.
I don't have the stage presence to pull that off, but I sing like Neil Diamond usually.
Oh, that's
I'll sing
nice.
Like Flip Forever in Blue Jeans. That's like my vocal range, you know, and
I can sing,
and also the words are really
too.
Easy.
My voice is low.
I also kind of like singing Happy Birthday.
Happy birthday to you, or
yeah,
happy
like
birthday,
Happy Birthday to you,
images, or Happy Birthday.
Not Stevie Wonder.
Happy Birthday to you.
Just Happy Birthday to you, because it's really short. Everyone knows the words, and you look around the room, and someone's eyes will light up, and you'll be like, it's that fucking person's birthday, and you're singing it to them. And then by the time, if people don't like it, it's over before
it's
they
over.
Knew it.
You
and
are
off
the
stage.
King of hospitality.
Yeah.
Because you can't help yourself.
Wait,
you want to make somebody in the room happy.
I do, yeah. I think Happy Birthday is a really great karaoke song.
Well, maybe we should go out on that note, that anyone who comes to see you will know that they will be treated well, because absolutely, you just can't help yourself.
I can't.
It's your nature.
Yep.
Punk rock or not. I love it. Vicious punk rock, but the nicest one ever.
Okay.
I know. I have to cheer. It's
cheers.
Water.
Aww. Yeah.
So, yeah, yes, we'll wrap it up on that then. So how can people find you? They can find you here.
They can come to No Anchor, or they can come to Navy Strength in Seattle. We also do a lot of kind of like pop-up things around the country, usually for charity of some kind. So follow
awesome
us on Instagram, Navy Strength Seattle, No Anchor Bar, Rob Roy Seattle. Yeah, we're all over the place.
Awesome, cool.
Yeah.
And you guys, wait, I think you were just telling me you guys are, if anyone is up here for Star Wars Day, which is only like
May the 4th.
I don't know that I'll air this before
that's
then,
okay. So we're doing an event called Vader Vix.
Vader Vix. Yeah, yeah, okay, so if this is way after the fact, anybody who's listening, just know that there was something.
Well, we're going to do it next year, too.
Called Vader Vix.
If
this
we
will
don't
be
get
an
sued
annual thing. I was like, my best friend worked for George Lucas for a minute. I'll tell him not to listen to this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, please.
Well,
well, it's
Disney
now.
And you know what? I know a lot more Disney people than I did Lucasfilm people.
It's
oh
fine.
My God, it's so
hey,
funny.
We're not
okay
making any money off it.
So
it's for the kids.
Totally. For the kids. For the kids. Vader Vix. I love that. Go to the website or look on the Instagram for the logo whenever it comes out, because it's brilliant. And yeah, so No Anchor.
Navy Strength.
We've got to go to No Anchor for the food. I got to go at least Rob
yep
Roy and Navy Strength.
And Navy Strength
right
Coffee.
And Navy Strength Coffee.
Yeah.
You're
coffee
an
shop
empire, dude.
We're a corner. We're a corner of the world.
So thank you very much. I so appreciate
thank you
for chatting.
It's great.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
See if anyone will learn something about you they didn't know before.
Yeah, probably.
Maybe a little bit.
I talk a lot, but I don't talk about all the things we talked about.
It's just the questions. Well, thank you, and until next time.
Chris Alford is a really, really wonderful human being, so I can very freely encourage you to check out Navy Strength the next time you're in Seattle. And if you happen to be there on July 9th, they will be hosting a benefit for RACES, the organization reconnecting immigrant children with their parents at the border. That is on July 9th. Go check out Navy Strength's Facebook page, their website, their Instagram, not only to follow them and look at beautiful pictures of cocktails and etc., but also to get more information on this event happening July 9th, 2018. It's the end of June as I record this, so I hope that you guys take advantage of that. And thanks so much to Chris and the team at Navy Strength for letting me sit in their bar and record this goofy podcast. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by the podcast Inside the Desert Oasis Room, which brings you casual and entertaining conversation with artists, mixologists, collectors, and enthusiasts of the tiki world, all while enjoying a tropical cocktail or three. Check it out at desertoasisroom.com. Thanks for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guests and our Spotify playlist, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.